Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here we go. Is everyone ready?
It's episode 39, I think. How do we get onto this? What's going on? Hello and welcome to episode 39 of The Front Three. My name is Adam Boltwood. Joining me, as always, is the one and only Lawrence McKenna.
Is Manchester happy or is Manchester sad? I just don't know.
Dave O'Brien will have some info on that. Dave, how are you feeling after Manchester United were knocked out of the Champions League last night by Wolfsburg?
To be honest, I feel like there's a weight that's been lifted off my shoulders. I feel it would have been a bit unfair for United to go through after the shocking display in Europe that they've had this season. And again, in the game, they played some brilliant attacking football, but they were exposed on the counter-attack. They were exposed at set pieces. And that is your bread and butter at that level of European football. You know, PSV deserved to go to the knockout stage. And that's what it was, wasn't it? They got more points. They scored more goals.
Do you not feel a bit sad? Do you not feel a bit angry?
Well, I think it's a better opportunity for this young Manchester United team to really cut their teeth in a senior competition. I feel that the Champions League is a bit, it's too much for them at the moment. You know, you're looking at young players, Memphis, Martial. I think I feel that they need to learn. They need to learn to lose, and that's what they've done tonight. They've learned to lose.
This is an incredibly positive spin, Dave.
I don't know why I feel so happy. I just don't feel like gutted.
Okay, Lawrence, Lawrence, give me your view then on Manchester United going out, because on Twitter, of course, Manchester United fans themselves are getting very angry. I've seen LVG out, hashtag LVG out more than once, sort of saying it's unacceptable for the club to go out at this stage, considering not only the amount of money they spent in the summer, but also the fact that in the group was PSV, CSK and Wolfsburg. Wolfsburg, of course, are a very good team, but you'd expect United to progress, wouldn't you?
I think United did expect to progress, and I think a lot of United fans felt that they should have progressed when they first looked at the group. If you look at the way that PSV are going at the moment, then obviously they've had some very good results recently, not only the Champions League to get them through, but also looking back at other results in the league. I mean, some pretty big scoring wins, and they find themselves just 4 points off the top at the moment. United, obviously, in a very similar position at the top of their own competitive league with just a couple of teams who are going for it up there. And I'm not comparing quality, but I'm certainly comparing the competitiveness of the very top of their leagues. For me, the thing with Manchester United is people talk about the negative football, and there only seems to be one angle on it, which is Dave makes very good points that they should be playing better, considering the money they've spent and the talent that they have. A lot of people talk about them going sideways. I still feel that's quite reductive sometimes of what Van Gaal does. If they were to win the league, you know, would people feel differently about that? And had United gone through tonight on a result which had, you know, Van Gaal initially engineered in the same way, then would they feel different about it? I guess my biggest problem with it is this sort of, it's the constant, it feels like people are constantly changing their perspective on it. And it's as if there is no consistent view on Manchester United. I don't have a problem with people changing their view, but I do have a problem with the revisionism.
I think Is there not a consistent view? I feel like since the start of the season, there's been growing dissatisfaction among not only United fans, but everyone who watches United, sort of saying they are very boring to watch, hardly score any goals. That doesn't feel like an inconsistency.
So the point that comes of that is what? That they think that because they've spent so much money and they have some players with the potential to be entertaining, are you saying there's a responsibility for Manchester United to be entertaining? Or is it the responsibility that they win?
I think the fans think there's a responsibility to be entertaining. I think as long as they win, it's different. But they've been dropping points, they haven't been scoring goals, and now we've seen the impact. If they, like you're saying, if they win the league and they play like this, people won't complain. But the fact is, they've gone out of the group stage in the Champions League in a group they were supposed to go through or expected to go through. That's when the fans are going to get angry, because they'll tolerate this style of play if they're winning. And like we're saying, you know, is it second or third in the league now? But as soon as things like this happen, that's when the fans are going to start getting angry. And I feel like it has been building.
So you're saying, as long as the success is there, then people will tolerate it.
I think they would, yeah. But at the same time, you can feel that growing dissatisfaction among United fans sort of with the way they're playing. And where are they in the league, United? They're not exactly in point. They're fourth.
I mean, their league position doesn't necessarily represent how far away they are from the pinnacle. The pinnacle is very close to Manchester United. But
I think that goes down to two things, really, doesn't it? It goes down to the playing style and what Lauren said about position of the league and so forth. If United were sitting in, you know, eighth, ninth position, and they weren't getting the results, they would be obviously be getting, you know, the fans would be turning on the board, on the manager and so forth. For me, Louis van Gaal obviously knows his stuff. You know, the way that United pressed tonight at some points were absolutely brilliant. You look at goal kicks, how United set up on Wolfsburg goal kicks. It was absolutely brilliant. You know, Louis van Gaal identified a problem there, and he really capitalised on that problem. The issue United have had over the last two games especially, they've had glaring opportunities to score goals. You think about the game at the weekend against West Ham. Marouane Fellaini was like 3 yards out with a gaping goal, should have put the ball away. Anthony Martial, on the penalty spot, should have scored after a brilliant play from Memphis Depay. And then tonight, again, Marouane Fellaini had another header saved on the line. Memphis Depay had a shot saved. Martial had a shot saved that arguably could have gone in at, you know, given another moment.
But I feel like a lot of that doesn't take the nuance of the game in. And I feel like the personification and the clubbing, the grouping together of certain aspects of Manchester United does a disservice to the rest of what Louis van Gaal's doing, what Manchester United as a club are doing at the moment and experiencing, and the overall experience of English football and the rest of European football right now. And the problem with the weighting of certain characteristics, certainly the entitlement to being entertained, I find difficult.
Well, I think the thing with that is that the Premier League has lost, and Manchester United have both lost Alex Ferguson. We might call the period of years after Ferguson, the Ferguson effect years or so forth, where we see teams forgetting how to play football to win games in a way. Let me just finish off my point. So you see Chelsea, you see Arsenal, you see Man City, and you see Manchester United attempting to play attacking football, but forgetting how to play a 4-4-2. You look at Arsenal, got absolutely spanked away in Munich. The wingers weren't dropping back. Like in the first leg where the wingers were making a bank of four, second leg, that didn't happen. Joel Campbell and Alexis Sanchez didn't put the work in and they got exposed. The Bayern fullbacks absolutely exposed them. Right, today, against Manchester United against Wolfsburg, Man United got countered through the middle because Louis van Gaal decided to pick Bastian Schweinsteiger as a single holder. Marouane Fellaini's position was like a centre-forward that was playing central midfield sometimes. And then Juan Mata that was playing number 10. So you had Bastian Schweinsteiger dealing with breaks of 3 to 4 Wolfsburg players, the likes of Julian Draxler, the likes of André Schürrle, the likes of Max Kruse. These are all players that have, and Varane who scored the goal. These are all players that play on the counter attack and they defend well. And you forget, and it, what sort of brings with that is that you see these structured teams like Wolfsburg drop off the ball, two banks of four, the two attackers, the two strikers are getting behind the ball. And then when you look at Manchester United, you look at City and you look at Arsenal, especially City this weekend. Kevin De Bruyne and Sterling, who played in the wide positions, couldn't be asked. They couldn't be asked to get back into defensive positions because, one, they forgot how to defend and they've forgotten how to win games. And I feel that Alex Ferguson brought that to the Premier League. Each player was assigned a role. You know, John O'Shea would play the big games. Why? Because he's got energy and he's got strength in central midfield. Darren Fletcher, one of the best players in a big game because he's got energy, he can press, he can harry. We've forgotten that teams require these water carriers to make a team successful. Why was Ronaldo so good at United? Darren Fletcher,
I don't know if everyone has forgotten how to do that. I think there are certain teams in the Premier League who know how to work and they know how to do this. I don't think that's exclusive to Sir Alex Ferguson, but I think it's about the culture and the overall ideas that people bring to clubs. Because Louis van Gaal won leagues at the same time as Sir Alex Ferguson was still challenging for Premier Leagues. So it's not like these two, it's not like post-Ferguson, these other people spawned out. So, because Louis van Gaal won at Barcelona, won at Bayern Munich, and set up more managers to go and do well there. I think maybe we'll see a similar effect post Louis van Gaal at Manchester United. But at the same time, I think there are some people rightly questioning what Louis van Gaal can do for Manchester United and whether he was the right person to bring in. I think his track record speaks for itself, but I also think that we're judging him just on the results. And I think a lot of people overlooked, and I mean, I was certainly one of them, although, you know, I was working with other people who drew my attention to it, the fact that for some time at Bayern Munich, people said he should go, and then he was successful.
You should have seen it. You should have watched that Bayern Munich side. I stopped watching Bayern Munich that season because Louis van Gaal was the centre-halves would literally have the ball for the majority of the game in their own half, like in their own third. And they kept on playing, you know, passes to each other. But the thing with that team is it absolutely exploded in February. They played Fiorentina away in the Champions League. I think they lost the first leg. And then the second leg, I think they won it 4-0. And the likes of Robin, the likes of Ribery, these players just started to click. The system clicked in their heads, or however it clicked with Van Gaal.
Lawrence, do you not think you're saying there about how people are judging on the results? Do you not think it's the opposite? People are judging on the performance. You're saying about that expectation to be entertained. So United, they're unbeaten in their last seven Premier League games, but in their last six, they've only scored four goals.
I'm saying that the problem is, and I think Dave relates to this because there are a number of people certainly doing it at the moment within the industry. They reduce stats down to one strand of stats, which is either win or loss, or the nuance of they had a lot of possession, but then they lost the game. And the problem is the reduction and the overall
backward passes. That's the one I've seen a lot.
Well, yeah, but that's the problem is that they reduce it down just to backward passes, or they reduce it down just to those things. And then people come out with the line, oh, I don't believe in stats, or oh, I don't believe in those things. Because what they mean by that is, oh, I actually don't believe in misinformation, or I don't believe in things which can somehow change whatever. And I think there's a really interesting sketch from something in the 1980s, which was called Yes Minister on English BBC TV. Now, it's a bit of a bizarre one, but for me, I think it applies here. With Louis van Gaal, we say, do you want to win? We go down a series of questions. So people go, Manchester United is an institution of winning. Manchester United is an institution. You know how to play football to win. Wait a minute. Manchester United are now playing football, which shows that they can win very narrowly at times, but they do have the ability to win through playing the football that Louis van Gaal plays, or the ability to stay and do what champions do, which is to stay with the rest of the pack and then break at the right time. You ask people a series of questions on talk shows. You lead moronic pundits down ridiculous alleys like Robbie Savage, reductionist people who producers can shape into whatever the fuck they want, get them to say whatever the hell they like, and they sit out there and they tie themselves in knots, and they're idiots for doing that. And they're leading people and leading a mass consciousness of football towards being basically gluttonous idiots who think that they're entitled to just win things all the time. And if they're not winning, then somehow they're not having a good experience within football. Fuck you, Robbie Savage. Fuck you and all those other people, because you're ruining my experience of football. Because I used to enjoy listening to people on the radio. I used to enjoy older men telling me what their experiences were. And I'm losing out on that, because consistently now, all we're hearing is privileged older white guys who at one point thought they were good, telling us how they're still relevant. And it's not true. So let's go down the other side of questioning people, which is, okay, so do you like watching attacking football? Yes, yes, I do. Do you enjoy watching people pass? Yes. Do you enjoy watching young people achieve? Do you enjoy hearing a narrative which is more nuanced than just, are we winning, are we losing, are they passing it back too much? Yes, I do. Okay, do you want to see better media than this? Yes, I certainly do. I'll post it in the comment below. But I'll post it in the description of this podcast. There is a Yes Minister clip, which basically shows that you can make people say, and you can make statistics say whatever you want them to say. And you can make the public say, or a mass of people look as if they're saying whatever you want them to say. And I think the same happens in the boring analysis of the whole of Manchester. And I'm just getting bored of it at this point. People clubbing the wrong things together and giving us nothing but crap. And there's very few people who are actually putting the effort in to do anything more. I'm not sure I have the tools to do better because I don't do stats every day, but at least I'm giving it a fucking try. And there's people on YouTube doing good things like that. Joel does it of Messy Seconds. I think Dave does it at Squawker. I think that there are other people at Opta who do it very well, but I think that we've had a great loss this week in Gary Neville as well.
How do we get onto this? What's going on?
I'm saying I don't think the analysis is good enough of Manchester United. Yeah. And I don't think that the analysis of Man City is good enough with that. And I think that tonight's game with Manchester United deserves some true in-depth analysis. Done.
Done. That rant is going to be popular on the Twitter.
I know it is. My problem. We're going to go, cool, well, go ahead, you do it yourself then. And I'm like, you can only start those things, but there's too many people who are putting out things that are just reductionist. It doesn't make any sense to me. And the Saints...
But is this anger coming from, you're talking about the Manchester United, the style of play that's constantly criticised this season? You don't think the analysis of Manchester United's style of play is thorough enough?
I think that I don't think it comes. I understand where people are coming from with it. And I understand that if you spend that much money, then you should be held accountable. But I also think that when you spend that amount of money, then you should also maybe ask Manchester United what they're trying to achieve now. Ask Louis van Gaal what he's trying to achieve now. I just don't know if the right questions are there, or whether people are just trying to string people up consistently.
Let me try and keep it simple then. I'm trying to keep it simple here. I just want to know, Dave.
Yeah.
Do you think it's not acceptable for Manchester United to have gone out of these group stages? But you're putting a positive spin on there. You're talking about Europa League, right? You're saying it's almost like a good thing.
Yeah.
But surely, style of play or not, United should have gone through that group, no?
Oh, 100%, yeah. But I think with that is that you've got to look at the whole club again, like sort of what Lawrence is saying in a way. Why have we had such a misfiring in the transfer windows for the last three seasons? It feels like we're chucking money at it. We've gone away from what Man United do is turn young players into superstars. I not mean this season in terms of signing Memphis Depay and Martial. What I mean with that is signing the likes of Falcao, Angel Di Maria. These are players that are, you know, they've already made their mark, and they're just going to get more and more expensive, and we're going to enter a market that's dominated by the likes of Real Madrid, the likes of Manchester City and the likes of Chelsea and PSG, whereas we should be crafting our own identity and we should be working with young players and we should be looking to do that. And that's why I feel why it's a good thing why we've been knocked out of the Champions League, because for these young players, going to away in the next round, you know, being second in the group and going away and getting hammered by Barcelona, that isn't going to be a learning phase. But going to Belgrade, going to Dortmund, going away to, you know, imagine playing Liverpool in this Europa League. That would be one of the biggest games of the century, and that would be in the Europa League. I feel that people give a real disservice to the Europa League in terms of, oh, you know, it's not the premier competition. It's obviously one of the issues with that is that UEFA decided to put it on a Thursday night. For me, it should be in tandem with the Champions League. It should be on Wednesday night and Tuesday night, because then you're going to get the rest for the weekend and so forth. The competition would work more. Obviously, the TV money's going to maybe go down, but people are still going to watch that football. People are still going to go to the games. You know, the fans, the real fans are going to be there.
But the problem is, Dave, that does reduce our, that we are going to see a reduced coefficient in England over time.
We should do it. You're not playing enough. You know, again, going back to my first initial point, tactically, we have been poor for the last three, four seasons.
Is that what you think? You know, you're saying there Manchester United aren't at the point where they compete with, say, Barcelona in the next round. Why are we not? United or Chelsea or Arsenal not at that point? Do you think tactical? Is it?
Yeah, going back to Wolfsburg, you've got, you know, Wolfsburg, they came second in the German league last season. Their manager completely transitioned them from a side that was very, very poor to a team that works hard. Again, going back to Caligari and Verana, two of the most hard-working wingers in world football. They made that system. They made Kevin De Bruyne what he is today. And they're going to make Julian Draxler a similarly equally as good player, because they defend, they do the running for this one player that is going to be changing games left, right and centre. It's sort of the same system of building, instead of like the likes of Real Madrid that don't build a team around one player, they have loads of superstars. Then you look at Barcelona that actually have one player that they build a team around in Lionel Messi. Obviously, you still have Neymar and Suarez. Bayern Munich, again, they're sort of building a team around Lewandowski, you'd argue, at the moment. So it's one of those things where I feel that we've just forgotten how to put a team together. We don't fight for each other. There's not enough. It just feels like a lot of these players that are coming into the Premier League on high wages, they don't care at all about the clubs that they're playing for.
Lawrence, let me get back to Manchester United with you then, because obviously you're
I'm pro Manchester United in this.
But you're angry
angry with the analysis of it.
Yeah, what is your perception there? You know, I know you said that you feel like you don't have the tools to give like the analysis that deserves to be given. But what have you made Manchester United and the job Louis van Gaal's doing? Because although they are doing well in the league, fourth, like I said, 3 points off the top. We're talking about this performance going out of the group stages. It isn't great, is it?
No, certainly not. I'm also sympathetic of the plight of any manager who is at that very top level, because I think, you know, I mean, you, Adam, experienced this. Just doing TFR FC, to get 11 people to even move out on a pitch is an achievement in the first place.
Of course.
To get them to do it, people aren't analysing, and, you know, all they're saying is boring football. It's difficult to get people to play boring football sometimes. I'm not saying, you know, it is boring necessarily to me. I think if you look for the right parts, then I think there are interesting aspects to it. It's not necessarily interesting to watch. I don't like the entitlement that a lot of people have for those kind of things. Bear in mind that the last 15 minutes of both those Champions League games in that group tonight basically shaped the future of Manchester United this season. And I understand Dave's positivity about going into the Europa League, but it would be good if Manchester United had gone through. And I think, you know, you'd be very happy if Manchester United went through. But I think you're right, Dave, to say that maybe it's good that they went through, because it then forced them to question the long-term project, or at least the short-term achievement within a long-term project.
Are you saying to me then that the problem is, so Louis van Gaal, regardless of whether his tactics being analysed properly, he's trying to do something. He's playing a possession football, whether or not the pass is going backwards or forwards. Is the problem not Louis van Gaal? Is the problem the strategy of the club then? Because as Dave sort of saying there about players that have left, about the money that's been spent, is that the problem?
I do think there is a wider problem of, you know, the culture at Manchester United at the moment, looking from the outside, because I certainly think there are a lot of things that when you visit the club, you see there's a lot of positivity from certain individuals there, people at the ground. You know, there's still very much a culture of, I think, a very warm culture at Manchester United. It was described as one of serenity today by another pundit on YouTube that basically meant, you know, Louis van Gaal's managed to weather the immense storm that some journalists have set out there for him and some other people have painted. I just think it's this, you know, going from one way to the other, basically an almost bipolar analysis of Manchester United. And I don't think it helps people within the club or outside the club. And I guess what I'm saying is, I think fans of football in the Premier League, you know, at one time it was good to laugh at another set of fans because that was great banter. Well done, TalkSport. You know, yeah. But now I think that we almost need to be working together to get a better analysis overall of what's going on in the Premier League, because there's a lot of big forces out there who essentially want to reduce it down to, No, just keep being entertained, because that'll make us money if you continue to be entertained. And
well, that's an interesting point.
That's not what I want.
Let me ask you that briefly then, because we're talking about the weekend just gone when Newcastle beat Liverpool and Bournemouth beat Chelsea.
But listen to the amount of people who talk about pushing and pressing against Newcastle. I was speaking to Christian tonight on Skype. We've all heard him on the show. If you're new to the show, go and find him. But he was saying Newcastle just dropped 15 yards back. But the number of people who went, gegenpressing doesn't work.
What I'm saying is, do you think, to get back to your point there about how, you know, it's an entertaining league, people are saying, oh, it's so unpredictable, this is amazing, you know, the Premier League might not be the best quality, but it's certainly the most entertaining, it's the most unpredictable. Do you think that is a good thing, or do you think that is a bad thing? Because do you think now we're seeing the impact of that in Europe, where teams are getting knocked out in the group stages when they should be progressing?
I think that when we speak about the unpredictability, what we basically mean is we're not very good at analyze. I think people speak about things that they cannot control when they are not very good at analyzing. And you could probably apply that to my analysis tonight. I'm speaking about a lot of things that I can't control. And stuff that I'm not 100% sure on, but at least I'm trying to start a conversation about it, or trying to find something better than what we're already talking about. Whereas a lot of people just go, well, it's unpredictable, isn't it? And so we just end up with a load of analysis, which is, well, Manchester United are poor this season. Yeah, mate, Manchester United are poor. What does your fan channel say? Yeah, they're poor as well. Well, thanks for that. Thanks for your match of the day watching analysis. That's really going to serve us better.
But what's your analysis?
My analysis is that Manchester United are a huge institution.
But not just Manchester United. I'm talking about how...
The Premier League.
Yeah, the quality of the Premier League. People are saying, what an unpredictable league, isn't it?
There's a number of ways to judge quality, and quality can come from, you know, being entertained. It can also come from the quality and appreciation of, you could say the same about wine. If you are told wine is expensive, you will look for the nuanced black currant that you're told to try and find. But if you're told that wine is worth £6, then you will say, yeah, it's good. Thanks. That's great. I don't need any. Is it corked? No. Great. And I think that's the problem, is that a part of it is ever so slightly, not even ever so slightly, but hugely, the commodification of football and the ubiquity of it means that to some extent people are fishing around the ubiquitous football that they have. And that's why maybe we're finding a lot of good analysis coming from countries that isn't necessarily where it's ubiquitous right now. Australia, to some extent the United States, to some extent the area around, you know, Indonesia, Singapore, those kind of guys, and the thirst for football. And also really good analysis from areas like India and other cultures where they're looking from the outside.
Where is this coming from?
I think people, you know, if you look at cultures like ESPN, there's certainly a lot of the English cultures are learning from people like them right now.
To
some extent, Dubai moving in as well. I think that, you know, but then Dubai is very closely linked culturally with what the West has done recently. So I think there's a lot more kind of fetishism from both sides there.
I know you mentioned Robbie Savage earlier, saying the analysis is poor there.
Yeah.
But for every Robbie Savage there is a Gary Neville. So Monday Night Football.
No, not for every Robbie Savage, though. Because, we've got Robbie Savage. We've got Stan Collymore.
We've got Adrian Durham.
We've got Adrian Durham. But listen, I've worked in the same building as these people, and I'm probably not getting an invite back again if they
hit. Analysis is there. It's like anything in life. The mainstream, the blockbusters, like in movies, they're going to be dumbed down. They're going to be a little bit more simple for the mainstream.
Not true at all. Go watch a Charlie Chaplin film. That was mainstream at one time.
Yeah, but I'm talking about right now. The analysis of football, there is good analysis out there. You have to look for it.
But for me, it's the sheer acceptance of the fact that you therefore have to look for that.
I don't think that there is an acceptance. I think Monday Night Football, judging by how big Gary Neville has got in the last 4 years and the celebration of him going to Valencia, people like that sort of analysis.
And I'm not saying that it's acceptance from the people who necessarily consume it. I don't think there's a passive acceptance there. I'm saying it's from the people who are in power. And the people who tell other people how easy it is going to be to get those things, and basically set out a system through which you consume, which put other things much more obviously, and where the emphasis is put.
Dave, talk to me about the quality of the Premier League then, because we're talking about the analysis there. But like I said, the weekend, everyone's saying, what a league, incredibly entertaining. But in Europe, we're seeing how English teams can't cope. Is this a worrying trend for you? Are we going to see, you know, in a few years' time that the quality of the Premier League continue to diminish until it's not what it is today?
Yeah, well, I think so. And I think the real problem with the Premier League, obviously, is underlying is the massively inflated market that we've built from the TV money. But again, behind that is the poor development of young players and the lack of chance that these young players are getting at these clubs. These are the players that will sort of, you know, the James Milners and the Fabian Delphs of the world, they're not the most gifted players in the world, but they'll do a shift for you. And these, we need to develop more players that can, yes, be at the top of the game, can you know, rival the likes of Lionel Messi, can rival the likes of, you know, Nesta, Cannavaro at the back, or, you know, someone in central, like a Ronaldinho or so forth. But it's just the development of these young players that, what are we aiming for in this country? We're so, like, we're schizophrenic in a way. Like, we've, before this sort of latest wave of football, before the Spain thing came in, we were actually playing really good defensive football in a way. We were sort of playing an English style in a way, if you would say. And then the Germans have now taken that and taken it to the next level. But we're sort of trying to be like Spain. We're trying to like play this. Loads of the clubs are playing possession football. For example, Manchester City are. They are forgetting the sort of, in a way, the belief behind it, or the theory behind how you actually win. And I just feel that it's signings that are the wrong way. It's signing, you put basically putting, you know, square pegs into round holes and so forth. And it just feels like a number of these clubs that are in the Premier League right now are just run the wrong way in terms of they've got so much cash that they don't know what to do with it in a way. I think Man City in a way are going to come out of this brilliantly. You know, give it 10 years when this whole academy that they've built is just going to start producing players, and these players, Dave, will get the chance.
But Dave, there is also the opposite argument to that, which was, I think I've already spoken about that on this podcast, which was that some teams are making some players make their own way to matches, or they're in Brazil, they're taking them out to play once a week on the street football. And the argument you're making is about, you know, basically making the very highest end of football. But then the problem being that that doesn't lead to a thickening of the amount of players that come into the game. That basically leads to a very slim elite, which
okay, I'll throw it back is, to the other way. I think another issue that we have in this country is that we get coaches of young coaches, you know, coaches that are the age of, you know, maybe 15, 16, 17. They're teaching kids of the age of, you know, 9, 10, 11 to play football. Does that not make a massive, you know, that's the, it's from like 12 to 16 or 11 to 16 is the age where the players take the most in. Yet we're giving that the responsibility of young, of youngsters, of young coaches.
Not always though. Where it shouldn't always though.
But this is a sort of the trend at the moment that people are really getting on the back of, that these coaches, these young coaches need to be mentored to go back and to, you know, to train these younger kids in a better way. And I feel it's the whole system that's a bit wrong at the moment. And
let's bring it full circle then, because we've gone from small picture to big picture. Let's go back down to small picture, because we've been talking for half an hour about this. So I just wanted to know, Dave, from in.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Your opinion as a Manchester United fan, I know you're not massively disappointed. We've seen this growing dissatisfaction with Louis van Gaal. Are you happy with the job he's doing, even though perhaps the problems he's facing are bigger than him? They're caused by the club and the strategy itself.
Again, yeah, no, I think it's the club. I think you can't pull one aspect out of the club. You know, we tried with David Moyes. That obviously failed. That was the wrong appointment. And now we've gone with Louis van Gaal. The signings that Louis van Gaal has made, whether it's his decision or the club's decision, it's going the wrong way there. I feel commercially we're going in an upward trend. We're signing deals to sell our, you know, to sell the soles of our shoes in a way, to, you know, not really, but, you know, in that sort of way. And you keep seeing these deals. Manchester United have signed a deal with Adidas. Manchester United have signed a deal with DHL. Commercially, the club's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, becoming so more like of a money making scheme. But it's not, it's forgotten its identity of being a football club.
There was a massive transformation, wasn't there? As soon as Sir Alex Ferguson left, it did turn into this cultural behemoth where. Almost signing the big name players became more important than the right players. But that's interesting. You think that's almost like the chickens coming home to roost then, that the strategy's all wrong and now we're starting to see the effects of that.
Yeah, we really are. I feel that's, you know, I've mentioned the youth academy issues before. I just think that United as a club, obviously Ferguson as a manager, as an influence on the club was so big. But they've done the wrong thing to replace it. You know, I've said it before. Look at Southampton, how that club's run. That's one of the best clubs in the Premier League. They've got a football director who runs the academy and so forth. Les Reed, absolutely fantastic. Like, why are we not looking at this? And we've got our chief exec, which is Ed Woodward. Ed Woodward is a money man. His whole career has been making money. He knows fuck all about football.
But it's just
mental.
But he's going to be flanked by other professionals, isn't he?
But I don't feel like, I just don't feel that he's either taken their advice the wrong way. It just feels like it feels a little bit Perez-y in a way where he feels like he's got to go, and get Falcao, going to go and get Angel Di Maria. Not looking at the traditions of the club of going out to Sporting Lisbon and signing a young Cristiano Ronaldo, or going to Everton and signing England's best player in Wayne Rooney. Arguably England's best player was Raheem Sterling last summer. Did United put in a serious bid? Probably not. But that's what they were doing before.
They know what Liverpool were going to do. But Dave, to counter that, Powell came on for Mata tonight.
Nick Powell, a really interesting thing. So he was one of the best 17-year-olds in Britain. Came to Old Trafford at completely the wrong time. It would have been good under Ferguson. Ferguson could have brought him on the right way. Ferguson thought he was a very talented individual. David Moyes, he gets loaned out to Wigan, comes back to United, don't play at all. Under Louis van Gaal, he plays one cup game, then just gets chucked to the reserves. maybe farmed out later on, and he's really disillusioned with life in football at the moment. Again, questioning another sort of microsystem to this is, why was Nick Powell brought on today with the likes of Andres Pereira on the bench? Stupid.
Lawrence, what do you
in
think?
In my eyes.
Lawrence, what do you think of this analysis then, that perhaps the problem is bigger than Louis van Gaal and the playing style, as perhaps others would say, that it stems from the club, the way the club's being run in the last few years?
Maybe it's both sides.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, I mean, you can't. It doesn't have just to be one thing. I think there's a lot of problems at Manchester United at the moment. There's also a lot of things that are good. Mm. I won't forget that. I think those things can also be played up. And I think Dave's done that tonight, partly in his analysis, but also you could have said the same if they'd gone through. It would have been great for Manchester United. You know, to some extent, I mean, you know, someone was saying, you know, this air of serenity was about the fact that the club had accepted where they were, and also that therefore they could play a different kind of football within that. I think people are trying to put a narrative maybe where there isn't one, or they're looking for some sort of explanation where there is either a lack of information or misinformation. And we want some information from Manchester United, but do they owe it to us? Probably not.
So, other clubs then tonight elsewhere, because we spent a lot of time talking about that. Real Madrid went through. They won 8-0. Hammering.
Is that the biggest thing ever in the Champions League?
I think it is. Equals? Does it equal the record? I believe.
I thought it was 8. Was it not 8-1? That was 8-0, and then there was 8. Was it 8-1 or 8-0?
I know that Schalke 7. Was that 7-1?
That wasn't 8-0. I know that much. Well, yeah, I know Real Madrid. Ronaldo,
I know,
sorry.
He's before in the Champions League.
Ronaldo broke a UCL record. Is he the first person to score, reach double figures in the group stages of the Champions League?
It's the second time he did it, right?
I think it's the first time, apparently, to reach double digits in the group stages. He's done
it. There was a lovely tweet from, who was it tonight?
Squawker.com, right?
Well, I mean, lots of those, Dave. And I think the one was, let me try and find it. It came from James Tyler, and he said, Rafa Benitez can get you an 8-0 in the Champions League group stage and getting you a win if you fancy it. I think part of it is that now we're talking about Rafa Benitez in a positive way now?
Yeah,
are we?
The narrative has swung within.
James Tyler also said this: Cristiano Ronaldo's piling up the goals, all very memorable and notable. Vital game too.
Ooh, that's a bit of
a dig tonight.
Anyway, they're through. They didn't send them through the 8-0, but they are through now, along with Paris Saint-Germain in their group, who go through second. Wolfsburg and PSV are obviously through in Group B, dumping out Man United and CSKA. Atletico Madrid and Benfica have gone through. And Manchester City top Group D after coming back to beat Mönchengladbach, their first place ahead of Juventus. That's good for them to get through. First might mean they have a bit more of a chance in the second round, Lawrence. Depends who they're up against, of course.
Well, that's the point. We've got to wait for the draw, really, haven't we?
But it gives potentially it gives them a better chance. They're avoid the likes of Barcelona, Bayern Munich.
You know? Yes, yeah, exactly. I mean, finishing top is always going to benefit you. But then, yes, but I still think the Champions League is so strong this season and so diverse that, you know, I mean, gives them a better chance of facing someone who is not incredible quality of the same level of Barcelona or Bayern. But at the same time, you know, it's not always just, Man City are going to play the same all the time.
Basically,
be happy they're through.
Yes, I'm happy because they could well be the only English team through to the group stage of the Champions League. Because things are not looking amazing for Arsenal, Dave. Tonight, I should say, they're going to Olympiacos. They've got to win by 2 goals. Is that right?
I think so, yeah. They can go through if they win 3-2 as well, I think.
Ooh.
Maybe
okay. We
should double check that before
so
we...
So they're currently third in Group F. They're 3 points behind Olympiacos, minus 3 they're 3 goals worse off in terms of goal difference. So yeah, it's going to be tough for them to go through, I'd say. They've got a difficult task ahead.
Yeah.
Wenger said he's hoping to capitalise on the fear factor. Lawrence, he's hoping the fact that, you know, the team, the fear of not qualifying is going to send them through. I mean, it didn't work for Manchester United tonight. But how'd you rate their chances?
Yeah,
they could do it.
We're not great away from Greece.
So a win in Greece would leave Arsenal level on 9 points. The tiebreaker for separating teams tied on points is firstly the higher number of points gained in matches between the two teams, which would again see the Gunners and Olympiacos level. That would see Gunners and Olympiacos levels. That's when why it goes down to goal difference if they win.
Yeah.
My God.
Does it go down to goal difference between the two games that they play each other?
First. Yeah, the highest number of goals in matches between the teams in question, followed by away goals in games contested by themselves. I think I don't know with Arsenal. You can never tell. Mm-hmm. Who's going to show up, whether they're going to do it or not. I'm tempted to say they're going to do it. I think having seen Manchester United fail tonight, they're gonna pull it out of the bag.
I do think that. You know, you look at Aaron Ramsey this weekend, he's stepping into Cazorla's shoes. Cazorla's been fantastic. Deep line playmaker this season, been running the show for Arsenal.
Ramsey
was brilliant. 111 passes he completed against Norwich. Were they forward passes, though, Dave?
There were
71 forward passes. I only know that because I did look at that.
I love it. So we're rating their chances there. What about Chelsea, Lawrence? All they've got to do is avoid losing to Porto at home. This the same team who lost to Bournemouth at the weekend.
We're talking about as if that makes everything a foregone conclusion that happens to Chelsea now. I don't think it is.
You wouldn't put money on them, though. To win at home nowadays.
You'd be clever too, because the odds would be longer, and if they do, then they win some money in the end.
How long ago was it that Jose Mourinho had that unbeaten home record? Was that still in force until last season, or was it the season before?
I think it was last season, wasn't it? But basically, it was a very long running record. The difference now is that there's a lot to look at and analyse negatively, but you don't necessarily know what's going on within the camp. Some people saying that maybe it's a good thing for Chelsea, and this is interesting, to drop down into the Europa League, because then there's a way back into the Champions League when they don't get into the top four.
Interesting. Of course, they could always just win the Champions League. They could go through and win the entire Champions League and obviously qualify. I mean, that's another option.
Maybe a less likely one. And he'd be off.
Football would be finished.
Do you think they can avoid defeat, Lawrence?
Yeah, I do.
You're going to put some money on it. I like it.
Yeah, do you want a fiver on that?
I don't know. What? I'd be betting.
No!
I'd bet the Chelsea going out and you'd bet they're going through.
Yeah.
Go on, I'll put a fiver on it. Let's do a Skype handshake.
Bold lads.
Skype handshake.
Real soon. I think Chelsea Republic.
Okay, interesting. So we'll see how it is going to have. Are we going to be pining all of our coefficient hopes on Manchester City then?
No, because the coefficients are, as
it's already screwed, explained
by Gab Marcotti and a number of other articles, is not just reliant. Has got to get
into. So Spurs and Liverpool could, you know, do something in Europa.
And United.
Apparently it took a big hit when Southampton and West Ham
didn't qualify.
That sort of set us up for the fall. Okay, interesting. So that is all the Champions League action from last night. There's our thoughts on what's going to happen tonight. We're going to move on to the talking point now, which is going to be about Leicester City. So let's talk about Leicester, guys. They're top of the Premier League. At the weekend, they beat Swansea 3-0. They're now on 32 points after 15 games. They're 15 points better off than
eight
they were
to stay up
last season. They only need 8 more points, yes, to reach that magic 40 points. What have you made of Leicester this season then, Dave? How impressed have you been by what Claudio Ranieri's been doing over there?
Yeah, no, it's really good. Like one thing that Claudio Ranieri would say is 8 points less until the 40-point mark. You know, it's very important. That's his strategy to get to that mark. and then sort of play it from there. But it's really impressive, their style of play, counter-attacking, sitting sort of deep in a 4-4-2, but then they explode into life on the break. Riyad Mahrez has been sensational in the Premier League this season. Scored 10 goals, got 6 assists. He's just been really, really good. Obviously, Jamie Vardy, the man of the moment, in form. I do feel that Jamie Vardy is a little bit one-dimensional in terms of his goals. They're all over the top. He's pinged over the top. It's usually one-touch, instinctive finish. When he has time to think, you know, when he has to slow down the game, it's a little bit worse. But he is in form, and obviously he's harrying. I love how he pressurises defences and so forth. But there are some sort of, you know, unknown quantities in this Leicester City side. For example, N'Golo Kanté came over from Ligue 1, and I think he won the most, was involved in the most duels than any other player. So take-ons and aerial duels. We kind of see his combative nature for Leicester City. I think he's won the second most tackles in the Premier League this season. And he's a real sort of, you know, driver from the heart of midfield. You've got Danny Drinkwater, who used to play with one of my mates at school. And he used to say that he was just an obviously unbelievable footballer at Man United and so forth. He's sort of the playmaker. And then you've got N'Golo Kanté, who's the box-to-box lad. And then you've got two very hard-working wingers. I just like the whole Leicester City system at the moment. It works right now. The only thing I fear is if teams start to sit off them. So you get the likes of West Brom playing them, Sunderland right now under Allardyce, and you know, people will start to work out that if you don't give Leicester space in behind your defence, you're going to be in, that Leicester City might struggle to break people down.
What do you think of that, Lawrence? Do you think teams are going to start treating Leicester differently as the season goes on? They're going to be giving them possession and letting obviously them play as the home team, and that could be their undoing.
Well, then they still have players who and a manager who's able to tinker with things. I don't think it's always been the same for Leicester this season. You know, I do think they've played a reasonably diverse set of teams, but then you look at the next few matches for them, which I will now bring up, and there's some real challenges in there. You look at the fact they've got to play Chelsea, then they've got to play Everton, then they've got to play Liverpool, then they've got to play Man City, then they've got to play Bournemouth, of course, who beat Chelsea. So And then they play Spurs. So they've got six matches against teams who are all at the starting the season expecting to finish at least in the top eight.
Do you think that's sort of the perceived wisdom, isn't it? That after Christmas, after New Year, that's when we're going to know a little bit more about Leicester. Would you agree with that, Dave? Like Lawrence is saying,
I think we do, but we do already know about Leicester.
But in terms of we're going to know where they can finish.
I think so. Yeah, definitely. I think that. Maybe not the away games, but I think when they get up for home games at the King Power Stadium, when the fans get behind them and all the players start to get at it, I think we'll see some really good games of football over the next six games. If they do pick up, you know, three wins, let's say, they could be definitely flying up for that top four. You know, beating the people around them would just be absolutely fantastic for Leicester as a whole. And I just like how they've kept the style. Obviously, they transformed last season under Pearson. He went to a back three. And they really started pressing teams. They played with a front three, midfield four, and a back three. So they really aggressive started pressing teams. And Ranieri came in. There's an absolutely fantastic article on The Guardian about Ranieri at Leicester City. And one thing that he said was that he didn't want to change the Leicester way. And the Leicester way has sort of become being that pressing in your face, aggressive style. It's a little bit, you know, thinking about it in a way, it's a little bit like Atletico Madrid, would you say, in a way where they play a 4-4-2, but they get very deep. They get very aggressive at home. They do play fantastically on the break. You'd argue, though, that the set piece, the scoring goals from set pieces and conceding them is a little bit different. Obviously, Atletico Madrid are brilliant at defending them. Leicester City, there's questions. Man United did expose that. And also goal scoring from set pieces is another question. But it's just good. You know, I hope to see more teams play a little bit more like this in a way where they're more of a team. I feel like Leicester are the only team in the Premier League. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I think it's interesting what you touched on there about how the form is almost extended from last season. Leicester are the best team in 2015, are they not, in the Premier League for points?
Probably so, but then they also have the lowest number, I think, of Premier League points after this number of games that we've seen in, I think it might be 15 years. I think it's just a little bit less. It might be 12 or 15, I can't remember. I read that in an article earlier in the week.
Well,
and then if you take that out over an entire season, then it will mean that any champion can win with possibly the lowest number of points they've ever needed in 25 years. So they are running within a pack that's running typically behind itself. Mm. Right? Them being top isn't necessarily everyone else being amazing and them being even better than them. I do think it speaks to the diversity of the league. And
they're you can taking probably extrapolate advantage a lot of points. Do you think they're taking advantage of these big teams slipping up?
I don't think that... I think that that is route one. I don't think that's necessarily true. I don't think they're taking advantage of anyone slipping up. I think they're playing teams at their own game. I think Ranieri's identified a number of tactical problems that other sides have, and not even problems, just a number of ways that other teams set up. And for a while now, the Premier League is set up to take advantage of mistakes, like Dave said a number of times on this podcast. And because of that, Ranieri is taking advantage of their mistakes. You know, I mean, the Manchester United goal that Vardy scored was almost a microcosm for their entire season. Ashley Young had a yellow card, couldn't make the tackle. The ball goes through, Vardy's in behind the back line, and it's Jamie Vardy to finish.
I mean,
and that's been a pretty typical storyline this season for Leicester. But look at what that plays to, and look at the monster that they ended up drawing with.
How do you mean?
Well, just look at what it achieved for them. The fact that, you know, they took advantage, they identified and then took advantage. And to some extent, that takes a diverse group of players. And Ranieri, and basically what you're finding is something that very often you see analysed in the NBA and also in NFL, a number of things, because of their turnover of players and, you know, the way that they trade their players in a different way, that things tend to come together in a slightly different way. And I think because, you know, people move around so much and therefore we're less likely to see the same gelling of the same number of people over a number of seasons. Although Golden State Warriors will be different this season. What I'm saying is that I think Ranieri's take advantage of that culture and has capitalised upon that at Leicester.
I'm waiting to see. I think it's interesting that he hasn't yet. I think he's starting to get the credit that perhaps he deserves, because obviously Jamie Vardy and Mahrez have been incredibly influential and to Leicester's form. But of course.
But so's Drinkwater.
So's Ranieri bringing Drinkwater back into the starting 11, playing Vardy through the centre, as Dave sort of mentioned there, bringing in Kante. These are all things that Ranieri has done. So I'm surprised. I think, like I'm saying now, he's starting to get that credit. But I remember when Ranieri came in, people were very sceptical. I think he just was managing Cyprus.
Based on his track record, they were right to be sceptical of what Ranieri could do with the side.
But it's incredible how to prove everyone wrong like that. And with Leicester, a team who are battling relegation last season, I just think the transformation's been incredible.
It's recent record, I think. His recent record as manager, you know, you go back to his time at Greece, was absolutely rubbish. And we've not seen it since the days of when he was in Italy, when he had Battistuta and so forth, that he really had a team that was sort of together. It was Fiorentina team where he had Rui Costa and Battistuta. In a way, he has that now with Riyad Mahrez and Jamie Vardy, a player banged at 28 in his form.
Vardy and Battistuta in the right same now. Breath. I never thought I'd see that.
And then Riyad Mahrez, who is one of the most creative players in the Premier League, created more chances than most players, I think, apart from Mesut Ozil, completed more take-ons. What I quite like about his use of Mahrez as well is I like how at home, when he plays with two strikers, he puts Mahrez on the right and he likes to drift to the left. He just drifts around. Then away from home, he plays like a bit of a, you know, sometimes he plays as a number 10. And that's worked really well with, obviously, Vardy's pace and then Mahrez's guile on the ball. Sort of really good combination of playing through balls and so forth. So I think it definitely credit to Ranieri, but we'll sort of see in January. I do feel that they need to buy a new, you know, potentially one centre-half, maybe two new centre-halves, if they're going to keep competing, because you will find that people will start to work, you know, people will start to expose the likes of Wes Morgan and the likes of Robert Hooke.
And what backs that up is also the number of goals they conceded and the number of times they've come back from losing positions this season, which is essentially the analysis that the Football Ramble gave earlier this week. And there was a great point made on that podcast that, again, that shows about the mentality that they've managed to come back from a number of losing positions. Because, you know, it's very difficult to just see players' heads go down if they concede first or find themselves in difficult positions, but very often they've played that back to their own advantage almost and spun it back.
It does feel like we're waiting for, or people are expecting Leicester to fail, though.
But there's a reason because of that, because actually they see that you know, the tinkering is good, but then there are also some people you consider the spine of that side who are not only exploitable, but also maybe people feel can't be that fit for the whole of the season.
What's the stats doing around, Dave, that no team at this point of these
points? Yeah, so no team in this point after this amount of games has
come less than sixth in the Premier League, which would be really interesting.
So that would be an that would still be an unbelievable achievement for Leicester to finish sixth if they and that's potentially, history tells us, as low as they could go. It would be interesting to see, though, people are talking about, you know, Vardy and Mahrez leaving in January. I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think they will. No. Although, I mean, you can imagine that Mahrez may be subject to a huge bid
by Manchester United.
I'll pay for him.
He's only 24 and he's incredibly humble in his post-match comments, unless, of course, that's a false humility, but I don't know whether I can comment on that. But, I mean, even then, Adam, what you would say is the next 5-6 games, which lead over Christmas and into the new year, are going to be the ones that shape.
That's when we're able to judge them.
I think we're able to judge them right now, but I think a lot of people are saying, you know, if they come up against more tactically astute managers or managers who maybe got their shit together a little bit more, then...
There's not many of them in the Premier League at the moment.
They're difficult to find, Adam.
Yes, they are difficult to find.
But I mean, next up, or against... I mean, Leicester-Everton has the potential to be one of the games of the season.
Oof. Oh, God. With Lukaku in form at the moment. Jesus, he's explosive.
Liverpool-Leicester City...
On
the 26th of December, is it gonna?
It's a Boxing Day cracker, lads.
I'm gonna get the wine out for that. That's a super Boxing Day. That's a booper Boxing Day.
I'm gonna get the white and the red. You know, I'll transition halfway through the game to the red. It'd be brilliant. You know, sitting back, Christmas tree lights on.
So refined, Dave.
Taking in the football.
No pints in there.
Yeah, not that. Christmas is about red wine and white wine, but.
Mulled wine, maybe a little bit of mulled wine.
Tell us what your Christmas is about in the comments below, and you can win a Christmas hamper. Oh,
so what?
Do you think subject to change?
So after last weekend, obviously a lot of big teams dropping points, and I know we're talking about how in January we might get a better sense of where they may finish up, whether it's first or fourth or sixth. But do you think, putting the money on it, put your house on it, are they going to finish in the top four? Could they maybe even win the league, Lawrence? Is that a bit too far? Is that a step too far?
I think...
Sir Alex Ferguson said he reckons they can win the league. So, I mean, it must be true.
Sir Alex Ferguson's saying a lot of things right now.
Yeah. A new book must be coming out.
Yeah, something's happening, Adam. I think he's saying a lot of things which give people good journalism. You can basically say, look at what Sir Alex said. Click here. I think, obviously they... can win the league, but most people, what they get pissed off about in the comments at the moment is whether they will win the league. And the fact is that they won't, because they're...
What about top four? Do you think that's realistic with the way other teams are playing? So the main competitors for top four are probably Tottenham, Liverpool and Everton.
There's a reason we have this feeling about this side, and it's because most of the time when one group of players come together, then it feels very good, but that tends to be a very finite thing or something that can only happen for a certain amount of time. We've spoken about Ipswich a number of times on this show, and spoken about how they got into the UEFA Cup just a few years ago, and then things went badly for them. We're basically seeing that this is good, but I imagine that come the end of the season there will be stats that will point to that say, right, that's where they dropped away. Yeah, and it's right. More towards, I don't know, what do you call it, like a resolving to the mean, Dave? Or like it's kind
regressing
of,
to the mean. Regressing so what, to the mean, you'll, what you'll see, like one what stats-wise in terms of Leicester City is that they have, in terms of pass length, so how far they're passing, they're only second.
Don't believe in stats, mate.
Second behind Watford in length. So Watford average pass length is 22 metres and Leicester's is 21 metres. You also combine that with Leicester City have the worst pass accuracy in the Premier League and the second worst possession in the Premier League. So this is what I mean with when teams do come and sit deep against them, and Leicester City have to have the ball. Do they have the quality to break the opposition down? Again, like tying my point from before about the centre-halves, they may need to buy new centre-halves in January. If they do have centre-halves such as Robert Huth and Wes Morgan, one, they're not good enough on the ball to be breaking teams down. Two, those two centre-halves playing a high line, you know, playing on the halfway line if they have to for teams that are sitting deep when they have the ball, that is an absolute disaster for the counter-attack. You know, you'll shift the ball down the flank and you're absolutely laughing. You know, Wes Morgan and Robert Huth aren't going to get back. So I do feel that there will be, you know, there's going to be some change, but I'd love to see Ranieri nail it and win the Premier League. That'd be so brilliant.
Jose Mourinho would bloody love that, wouldn't he?
he'd lose his mind, I think.
The one season that he drops away and someone else comes in.
And Chelsea relegated at the same time.
Although, I don't think he would, because he didn't seem like a huge fan of Ranieri. I think he called him a granddad or something.
Yeah, he's got beef, haven't they? He can barely speak English, this guy. He's been in England for years, blah, blah, blah. Absolutely hates him. I think that would be Mourinho would leave Chelsea. That would be the thing that finally drives him out. If Ranieri wins the league, right, fuck this, lads, I'm off.
This is ridiculous.
Goodbye. Enough. Okay, very interesting.
That's it. Never see him again.
Well, they have it. That is episode 39, I believe, of the Front Three. Thank you very much for listening.
We didn't cover very much, did we?
We got a little bit in depth with the Manchester United stuff. I think we got a little bit excited.
We're our own arses, mate.
I was expecting Dave to get a little bit angry, but it's actually you.
No, it was me.
Yeah, turn out.
Bloody hell, who expected that?
Hey, let's get him on a fan cam, Adam.
Oh, mate, they would go viral. I tell you what, if the Front Three was a fan cam viral channel, we'd be going mental right now.
There is a lot of other news out there this week. I mean, there's a lot of things going on in the footballing world, guys.
We're going to have to touch on it in the questions podcast, Lawrence.
We really are, because there's some good things happening, Adam.
We'll get to them, mate. I'll make sure of it. We've got a lot of questions to get through for Saturday. We'll make sure there's lots more coming in. I'm sure there will be after all the
Champions League. Get your questions in at the Front Three. We'd love to hear from you.
At the Front Three on Twitter.
And of course, Adam, if people want to hear from you, where can they go?
Shit. Yes. It's Adam Boltwood on Twitter. Go and follow me. Dave, spell your Twitter name.
I've forgotten it, lads.
No, oh, mate.
It's gone. I'm joking.
Banter is off.
UAWKAEAVE.
Good.
Quit that.
Dave, you know your girlfriend? Will she be the squawker babe?
Yeah, mate. When she gets signed up, mate.
Please make an account, Dave, now. Just Photoshop on a wig or something.
Dave goes to every date going, I need you to sign a contract just in case you do indeed become the Squawker Babe.
You are now Squawker Babe.
Are you happy with this handle? Yeah. Do you think you can produce stats at the weekend?
I love it already. Well, there you have it. Hopefully we'll hear more about Squawker Bay on the next episode of The Front Three. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.